My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Jota Tanaka has worked for Kirin Brewery Company for 34 years, leading its whisky business as master blender since 2017. He's had a really interesting career path through the Kirin business to arrive at his current role, including stints in winemaking, wine marketing, and leading product development for its subsidiary, Four Roses Distillery in Kentucky. We'll get into some of that in this interview with Jota, who was inducted into the Whisky Magazine Hall of Fame in 2022, one of many career accolades he's received in recent years. Today, Jota is pouring his passion, skills and experience into Kirin's flagship whisky brand, Fuji, which is produced at the Fuji Katemba Distillery at the foot of Mount Fuji. Established in 1973, Fuji Katemba is one of very few distilleries producing both malt and grain whisky at the same site, which explains the unusual labelling, single blended, on the newest Fuji whisky expression. This is a special episode of Drinks Adventures, produced in partnership with Fuji Whisky. Coming up, Jota and I explore the many different facets that make Fuji unique, including its unwavering commitment to releasing whisky when all the component parts have reached peak maturity, rather than at a certain age. He shares his experience working at the distillery when Japanese whisky was at its lowest ebb versus the boom times of today. As Jota explains, it's quite remarkable that Fuji Katemba survived the downturn at all, with another distillery, Kuruizawa, famously shuttered during this period. Jota has also been actively involved in Japanese whisky industry activities to protect the integrity and reputation of Japanese whisky by assisting in the setting of labelling standards. We talked about those issues extensively with Dave Broom on the podcast in 2020. Jota will now update you on the current state of play. And I ask him whether the standards may have come too late for Japanese whisky, given the reputational damage that has already occurred. I'm really excited to present this interview that I recorded with Jota on his first visit to Sydney in March 2023. Well, Jota, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm so thrilled to introduce who we are, what to do.
Wonderful. Well, you know, looking at your biography, your career biography, there's quite a few things that kind of stick out to me as being quite unique in your career background. And one of those is sort of, you know, you started out your production career in winemaking and you've sort of found your way into distilling. There's not too many people that I speak to, not too many distillers that have that sort of background. Has that kind of been beneficial for your career in making whiskey?
I would say quite a bit. You know, many people ask me why you experience it different in areas. From the different perspectives working in other industry or experiences that really help us. Open your mind. You know, the thing is, you know, bourbon distillers and scotch distillers, majority of the people working only the industries. As a matter of fact, I joined the brewing company, trained to become a brewmeister, trained for 6 months, but ended up 1 year after joined the Kirin Brewery, I was transferred to Napa Valley, California, working and study at the UC Davis later on. So I was learned the winemaking and study research in the yeast fermentation. After I gone back to Japan, I was working on the wine development, product development, and also RTD, ready to drink development. Then all of a sudden, my boss said to me, "If you're interested, I train you to become a blender." The whiskey part. So then eventually I became the whiskey blender. A few years after that, there's some job opening at the Four Roses in Kentucky. Four Roses is known for bourbon. I raised my hand I'm the guy that needs to be there. So I got a job making the Spirit of America bourbon with Four Roses people for 7 years. I enjoyed so much. I wanted to live and work a little longer, but the company said, come back and work in our whiskey divisions. So I became chief blender at the Fuji Gotemba Distillery, then became a master blender at 2017. Then where I am right now.
And you've also had some marketing experience as well, which
oh,
again,
you already know that.
Yes, that's in the biography that that Ryan sent me. So I've been very well briefed.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's quite different to have some marketing experience. It must give you, you know, a different perspective on the business.
Yeah, exactly. I had an opportunity to learn wine business aspect and brand building. But also, on top of it, I had opportunity to travel around Shreveport area. That's the how I get interested in port and sherries. So many good sherries. Amontillado, Orloso, Pedro Jimenez. I didn't realize those tasting experience in the sherries really helped me developing whiskey aging. So a lot of what experience really helped me who I am right now.
When you came back to Japan to take the job at the Fuji Gotemba Distillery, tell me about the position that the distillery was in at the time when you came back, and maybe some of the changes that have happened in the time that since you've been back there.
I went back to Japan 2009. That is still bottom of the whiskey market. Even in Kentucky, the consumption of bourbon was decreasing in volume. But same thing in Japan. But after I came back 2009 or 10, hit the bottom, then start to come up. But at a point where, to be exact, we had a hard time. I cannot say too much, but we were not able to produce at a particular year. Try to minimize excess stock. The moment inside the industry, other company too, try to maintain their stock levels. In the industry right now, we all regret it. We are now far behind the supply. As you might know, blender, the task is blending a whiskey or tasting whiskey is a minute, small portion. Production planning, also the stock management, quality control, the whiskeys, and so on. So there's a lot of tax involved. But because of that market situation, few people, some of the people left the company, and I was the person who will lead the small group, being the chief blender, but only few other people, even in other area of whiskey business. So small group struggling maintain the business.
Do you think the distillery, was there a risk it could have been closed around that time? Because others have come and you have to look at Karuizawa.
Yeah. One thing, Karuizawa decided shut down. That moment, that was the bottom. So always people talking about whether or not shut down. But 2010 and 9 hit the bottom. There's some couple of stuff, good things happened. TV program of Taketsu Masataka, who was the founder of Nikka, and he was the first plant manager of a Yamazaki distillery for the Suntory. That stimulated the market as consumption of whiskey all of a sudden skyrocketed, and also highball boom. People started to enjoy the highball. That moment, globally, Japanese whiskey are recognized, kind of feel like discovered. Everybody mentioned, never realized Japanese whiskey is in high qualities. Start to win the international competitions. Those are the three incidents helped our market grow.
And do you remember when your bosses at the company were saying, I think it's time to start putting some more whiskey down to mature around that time?
I would say that is 2017 or 18.
That's when you really reacted and started yeah, started putting more down. So we've got a while to wait, I guess, still for the pipeline to really arrive of this stock,
Many people ask us, when you can supply more enough, I would say it takes years and years. Could take 10 years or so. Because the way we make it and the quality of standard of ourselves, it's not easy to maintain that quality. I mean, we don't want to release immature the quality, or the whiskey doesn't meet to our quality standard. So it takes time.
Fuji Gotemba is, you know, one of the few distilleries in the world that can produce both malt and grain whiskey on the same site. What's the historical reason why that came about?
Our history goes back to 1973, when our company started as a joint venture among three entities, which is Kirin Brewery, our parent company, with Sivas Brothers, which is known for Sivas Regal Scotch whiskey, and J.E. Seagram and Sons. Back then, Seagram is the largest conglomerate whiskey company, owned a lot of distilleries in U.S. and Canada, founded by Canadian Mr. Sam Bronfman. So because of that history in the background, from the beginning, we were capable of importing lots of equipment, whiskey making know-how, technology, not only from Scotland, Canada, as well as bourbon making. So that's one reason. From the beginning, we were making at the foot of Mount Fuji everything, not only malt whiskey, but also three different style of grain whiskey making method at one location. That's why we are so unique, not only in the history background, but also in whiskey making style. Seagram used to own five different bourbon distilleries in Kentucky. Four Roses was one of them. 2002, Four Roses was up on sale. That's why Kirin acquired Four Roses. There's some job opening, and I got a job opportunity over there. Because of that, we kept buying the barrel from the Four Roses. We are so proud of our ex-bourbon barrel, but everything we're proud of, ex-Four Roses bourbon barrel use for our entire whiskeys. Of course, we're using new Charoak barrel as well, which is the same barrel which Four Roses buy from, produced by one cooper in Kentucky.
Do you have any other barrels at all, or is it all 100% Four Roses, or have you also got some, you know, ex-sherry and those wine barrels there as well?
Our main focus is American white oak. Of course, like I mentioned, new Charoak barrel, but majority is ex-Four Roses bourbon barrel. But on top of it, we keep experimenting and challenging with other barrel too, to learn something new or something different. So we do experiment with, of course, Spanish oak, virgin Spanish oak or sherry cask, but also French oak red wine cask, even white wine. There are also Mizunara.
Oh, yes, I was going to ask about Mizunara.
Sure, Mizunara. Definitely we can get unique flavor. Then think about combination. More whiskey aged in Mizunara. We're doing some other stuff, as you can imagine. Bourbon style of whiskey or any other dish of whiskey aged in the Mizunara, that's what we're doing. So those are the stuff. We have a lot of variety in style. Majority though, American white oak, because the style of flavor developed using the American white oak is our main focus.
When you mentioned the Mizunara, how long has that been part of the maturation program there?
Well, for us, I would say less than 10 years, because that was the main focus. And people expecting Mizunara for the Japanese whiskey. But Mizunara character, it's such a unique. But to us, that's not our main focus. Our main focus is, I would say, natural beauty. Aroma and the character produced during slow aging in delicate yet layers of new, different aroma flavors. Of course, character from Mizunara, exotic or incense wood character, that one of the character really developed during the, you know, Mizunara aging, but that's only one of the element. That's not only that a character makes Japanese whiskey.
When we go through the production stages upstream, so, you know, brewing, fermentation, distillation, we've talked about the equipment that you have there that's very unique, but are there any other particular sort of techniques that you use that you think are quite different to how it's done elsewhere?
Of course, definitely, as you mentioned, distillation method is the largest. Of course, we are proud of our fermentation technology and know-how, but what makes us unique is how we nurture or how we develop natural flavor. Our important quality of standard is degree of maturity, not the age statement. People asking, what's age of your product? Fuji's single grain and single blend, no age statement. For us, age is just a number, but more importantly, degree of maturity is our key quality of standard. In order to produce nice, flavorful aroma flavors, you need to pick or withdraw the barrel at the right moment. Make sure that the whiskey mature at peak. Peak of maturation, we call it. It depends upon style of whiskey or depend upon how you produce the whiskey. Bourbon style whiskey we make, which is exactly the same way we make as bourbon, distilled with a beer column doubler and aged in new charcoal barrel. Those style of whiskey march up peak once aged over 5 years. Go over the hill, aged over 8 years. So we tend to peak between 5 and 8. Speaking of Canadian style, we tend to use those aged over, mature peak, aged over 8 or 10 even, or a little longer. So we tend to use Canadian style grain whiskey, aged more than that long. But make sure not to have any immature characters. Normally these days, bunch of whiskey no-age statement, I see a lot of immaturities. To me, that's the one we want to make sure not to have it. I'm not talking about probably the difference in the style making, different way of making, but just the quality standard we really pay attention to is. Then other biggest one is Mother Nature of Mount Fuji.
The water source are we talking about there? Or
Not only water source, but the high humidity and clean fresh air. We import malted barley from UK, but produce everything one side, not only malt and grain, everything. So we're talking a single blend, produce everything at one location. But more importantly, the water source, everything from Mount Fuji, and the environment, the location, everything from mashing through the bottling, everything produced at one location under one terroir.
Obviously, the reason we have you here in Australia, which is we're very lucky to have you here for your first visit, and you know that the occasion is obviously we've got these beautiful new Fuji whiskies in Australia, and we're going to be able to get our hands on some Fuji whiskey, which is great. These are new products, aren't they?
Yes.
New globally, not just new in Australia. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what went into creating these two products, and you know, what were you trying to achieve in terms of the style and the significance that these products have for the Fuji Gotemba distillery.
I tried to make this a long story short, but, you know, because of the history and background, we used to make a global blend. We never thought about what that a Japanese whiskey should be up until 10 years ago or before we received global attention. We were only focused on making the whiskey for domestic market, which is high quality but affordable, approachable, in order to make a variety of style of whiskey. We kept making those whiskeys, but also importing the whiskey in the bulk. But when we think about looking back our history, we realize that what will be who we are, what is the uniqueness, we kept talking with our fellow, the colleagues. What makes us so unique? What we can do? Thinking about, oh, we need to have a new product to more appeal to the people, and also we can have a good opportunity to represent what the Japanese whiskey is all about. Thinking about location, the history, and Mount Fuji, we have a great Mother Nature. What we can make a full use of that environment? What would be the unique flavor what we can introduce to people? Peat is not our focus because peat or peated barley, peated malt is important. Our Japanese food, culture, in general, people appreciate the delicate food with delicate whiskey. We decided more focus on fruity floral and go with food or enjoyable as it is and nurtured by Mother Nature is fruity floral. Like you mentioned, you said the beautiful Fuji. I really appreciate that, the word beautiful because if I were asked, Jota, what kind of whiskey you trying to make? If I say using only one word, we want to make beautiful whiskey, which represent what we can do, reflecting Mother Nature of Mount Fuji. By tasting the Fuji product, I hope people can imagine the beautiful Mount Fuji silhouette or just iconic or representing what the Japanese whiskey tastes like. When we developed it, we come up with the brand name Fuji. This single grain, Fuji single grain is the first product we launched because we were known for grain whiskey. Before we developed this product, we received a couple of highly accolades, like a world best grain whiskey, world best single grain, or world best grain whiskey. So because of that background, we decided, and also in a way, we unique. So simply thinking about more refining so that try to produce under the new brand Fuji and introduce to others. So just by natural or naturally because of thought process in the background, let's introduce single grain under the Fuji brand. You know, normally the single grain is produced in continuous distilled and really like a light in style, just a lot of oak flavors. Our style, in a way, we have a lot of rich flavor in it. And some of the one we use rye grain as well, not only corn.
Do you think that grain whiskey is getting more respect or getting appreciated more out there than perhaps it did? Because I think malt whiskey, you know, amongst the aficionados, it's kind of had the limelight for a long time, hasn't it? But we're starting to see these beautiful grain whiskeys getting a bit more attention.
I think it's changing little by little, but still a lot of people expecting malt and highly, like people saying that a grain whiskey considered as a silent or filler to make a malt whiskey drinkable, approachable. Just the grain whiskey is produced to support or to make a blended whiskey approachable, drinkable. I mean, bourbon is also grain whiskey, but many people consider that's a bourbon. They didn't realize, they don't perceive as a grain whiskey, but looking global whiskey market, bourbon is also category of in the grain whiskey. This is kind of a cosmopolitan, bourbon style, Canadian, the Scottish. So it's in a way unique. So this is in a unique position, but still image of a grain whiskey, it's hard to break. We're not hung up on the category of grain whiskey. Just want to introduce unique whiskey we produce. Category, so what? We want people enjoy discovering new whiskey or new styles.
It's a different flavour experience.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, for sure. Now, single blended, not something many people will have seen on a label before. So maybe we can just quickly explain what single blended is and tell us how you composed this whiskey together.
Right. First of all, you mentioned, there's no such a category because there is no such a concept or there's no definition or category. So even we come up with this concept, we had to apply to the authority to get approved. So last year we applied, approved, so that we are the first company put the single blended on the label. So we are the first company launched in the market. Look back in history in the Scotch market, decades ago, one or two distilleries produced such a product. So we are not the first distillery produce such a style of whiskey, but we are the first distillery holding the name single blended on the label. First of all, what does mean by single blend or single blended? It refers to that a whiskey, blended whiskey produced only from a single distillery. That's a single blended. Single malt produced by only single distillery, single grain produced by only single grain distillery, single blended, produced everything at one single distillery. Unlike any other distillery, we are the only distillery making not only malt, but also grain whiskey of a bunch of different style of grain whiskey, everything conducted on one site.
If we compare these two whiskies, you know, there's obviously blending of various different component whiskies in this one as well, but the fundamental difference is that this one has pot still, malted barley, single malt whiskey in it as well. So are the other components of this whiskey similar to that? And the fundamental difference is that the single malt whiskey that goes into that as well.
Style of grain whiskey, everything that used for single blended was similar. I mean, same style of whiskey used for single grain, but different proportion, different, for example, bourbon style of grain whiskey we make, we change sometimes mash bill, changing the yeast, of course, and also we are not strictly following the exact definition of bourbon making. Bourbon have to aged in the new charred oak barrel. But sometimes we can develop unique flavor by aging in the bourbon barrel. So changing that, in general, same style of whiskey produced, but in order to make this single blended concept of this, of course, on top of terroir of the time, but also we want to make something more expressive and fruity floral. But if I had to express what it tastes like, this is on top of it, first, beautiful, then silky, creamy, everything in a harmony. That's the stuff. As you might recognize, alcohol strength is 43 of this, single grain 46. We changed because of our test blend. First, we conducted a series of test blend, changing little by little. We tried 43, 46, 45 even. We made exact contents, but different alcohol strengths. We chose 43 because we want to people enjoy that smooth, delicate, all in harmony.
Well, I suppose we should move on to talk about this particular one. This is the Single Blended Japanese Whiskey 2022 Masterpiece. Mm-hmm. This one is in market now, I assume. Are we going to then see a 2023 coming up in Australia later this year? Or maybe you could just tell me, we'll start by just talking about the whiskey we've got in front of us and then what your intentions are for this sort of vintage blend in the future.
Okay, thank you. First of all, the 2002 Masterpiece, that's not the vintage. This is the year we released this to the market for the first time. This is the first single blended product launched to the market. This is the product Whiskey Magazine wrote featured article March last year, and the Whiskey Magazine recognized us the pioneer of single blended. So this is 2002 was the year when we launched this product, first time in history. So that's the year, not the series of a product many people expecting what's the next. We might launch something in the near future, but we don't have any specific.
It won't necessarily be an annual release from here. No, okay.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
This is, we wanted to have such a memorial moment. We wanted to have something different from others. And looking back at history and something we are experimenting, we're not only using American white oak, some red wine, French oak cask, and some other stuff. A small portion, though. One thing is, this next question will be the age. In average, 15 years plus. Some of the malt whiskey and some of Canadian grain whiskey aged more than 30 years, although small proportion. In average, 15 years.
I can see why you wouldn't want to put an age statement on there then, because if you put 15 years on there, it's there's a lot of much older whiskey in there too. So
right,
can only put the, what is it, the youngest whiskey that's in there on the label. So,
right.
Yeah.
And also on top of it, age statement is not our focus. So the degree of maturity and also flavor harmony. That's the reason that majority of a product of ours are non-age statement. Of course, in the future, I cannot say when, but of course we are working on Fuji something age claim product, but this is all what we have right now. But in the future, yes, of course we want to please people, or we want to drink ourselves too, something different too. So there's some good aspect of having the age claims, age statement, but that's this one of expressions we can introduce.
I understand you've been involved with the setting of standards for Japanese whiskey labeling.
Yes.
I'm sure my listeners would be very interested to know what the current status is and when are we going to see these changes introduced and what's happened since the announcement was initially made.
Okay, first of all, we are so proud, you know, what we come up with. Hopefully that really help and prevent from some, ambiguous or, lack of better term, fake Japanese whiskey kicked out. But reality, Japanese labeling is not strict law, only applied to the group member and they belong to the association, Japanese Spirits Liquor Association. Outside of that are members doesn't need to follow. And now, looking at the liquor shop in the Sydney, we saw some Japanese producer on the label. Look close. It says Japanese Aqua Vita. It doesn't say Japanese whiskey. Japanese Aqua Vita, but Japanese character, and they look like a whiskey. It has brown colors, just a sit placed next to authentic Japanese whiskeys. Those are the reality in the market. I mean, still, we concern about. Thanks to global attention nowadays, people realize and they respect the Japanese whiskey labeling. People follow. So even though that's not a strict rule, some of those are replaced or removed.
Is there a movement to have, you know, some tougher government regulations? Is that possible?
This moment, it's hard. Hopefully, in the future, that happens. But this moment, the way it's that rule changing or becoming the law could be the hard.
Do you have any concerns that, you know, there's been sort of damage done to Japanese whiskey that might be hard to repair the reputation by some of these poor quality products that you're talking about?
Well, that's a yes or no. This moment, good thing is many websites talking about those ambiguous or fake, putting even their name, which is authentic and which is not. Those are getting more well-known, those sites. So people who concerned about or interested in what's happening, people start to access to those sites. But in general, many people don't realize there are such differences or such issues. And also in look in the liquor shops everywhere, even US or other countries, a lot of still ambiguous or fake on the shelf with a very high price, seems like, or selling at the premium categories. So still, we concern about. Looking at history, those wrongdoing hurting the market. So could crash the market. So we really concern about. I'm not optimistic, but I'm at the same time, I'm not pessimistic as well. Just you need to pay attention to.
Okay. Well, Joseph, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us on the Drinks Adventures podcast. It's been a fascinating chat, and congratulations on these beautiful whiskies that you've introduced to us. And I really hope you enjoy the rest of your time here in Australia.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm so thrilled. I'm really feel fortunate to have opportunity to introduce who we are and what we do.
I hope you manage to find some good food and drink while you're in Australia.
Yeah, already we've done it, but still more to come, hopefully.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
And if you're listening in Australia, Fuji Whiskey Single Blended is exclusive to the Whiskey Club as its Whiskey of the Month for April 2023. Fuji Single Grain is available in select Dan Murphy's and First Choice liquor stores nationally. There's only 300 bottles coming into Australia of Fuji Masterpiece 2022. Look out for that one in leading whiskey bars near you.